It's a trap!
Hello and welcome to episode number 189 of Radio TCX,
your weekly source for X-Wing news and strategy.
I'm Tim Dugan, and joining me as always is my co-host, John McDermott.
Hello, everybody.
Carson Ray is unable to join us this week. He is busy working on his Denver Broncos podcast, so good luck to that. Check that out on Patreon soon, I'm sure. Instead, it's just me and John here trying to hold down the fort and resist the urge from turning this show into a straight-up Marvel Champions podcast.
Great game. Highly recommend it to anyone if you haven't played it yet, especially if you're a fan of Legendary. There's a lot of elements that are similar to that, but overall, great game. Tim and I played a little bit this past weekend, and it's a lot of fun. Highly recommend.
Yeah, it's basically the only thing on my mind right now while I'm still in Worlds recovery mode, but this is all you'll hear about it today. We will remember that we are an X-Wing podcast, and that's why you're here. So we've got a decent amount to talk about today. We're going to be looking at Wave 6, which we haven't really previewed very much on the podcast while our focus was on Worlds, so we'll talk about some of the new stuff coming in that wave. And then we're also going to look at some questions about the state of the X-Wing competitive game, looking at, you know, is hyperspace relevant? Should it be relevant? And maybe talk about some of the lists that are potentially broken and problem-causing.
Yeah, so let's jump right in and talk about some new ships.
So I am totally surprised that Wave 6 is supposed to be coming out before the end of the fourth quarter of this year. And I think I didn't think it was coming out till next year, right?
Yeah, so I swore when they did the Gen Con release video back in August that at the end of the presentation it said coming out quarter one 2020, but I actually went back and revisited that article just this past week and got to the bottom and it said coming to stores late quarter four 2019. I was like, oh, okay, holiday ships, that's cool.
Yeah, and it's mostly reprints, so a lot of stuff that we already have in our collection. The A-Wing paint scheme looks pretty cool, but we also have a couple new ships on there. So the old stuff that's getting reprinted is SAS Renegades reprint, which comes with an alternate paint scheme U-Wing and T-65 X-Wing, and presumably going to come with the rest of the SAS Renegades content, which is a little weird because that was already basically a second edition release when it came out, kind of bridged the gap between the two editions, right?
Yeah, it was, I think, technically, along with the Reaper, the first second edition release. I mean, if you count it as such, because those came out in, would have been June of 2018.
Yeah, and like I get that they want to have it on the shelves in the current packaging, because the older edition packaging, it's just a little weird for me. Like, I feel like that wasn't that long ago, you know, about a year and a half ago, I guess.
Yeah.
Either way, though, that's coming back, so we'll have all that content available. The Houndstooth, along with a Scum Z95, also coming as the other large package ship pack there. So that'll be interesting, too, because the YV-666 is currently not available in hyperspace. The Z95 is, but presumably that'll be added upon release. So another addition to the hyperspace format.
And I think both of those ships in this expansion are also sporting new paint schemes. The Z95 will have a Nash to Pups paint scheme to match the YV-666, which is kind of cool. It's not, you know, like a new ship or anything, but to have some alternate paint schemes. Which has been kind of a trend with the Scum faction, and I actually am kind of a big fan of that.
Oh, well, and generally, as a second edition player coming from first edition, it's kind of nice to have at least another reason to potentially buy these to get those new paint schemes. Same with the A-Wing there. And I remember when the YV-666 first came out in first edition, it didn't even come with a Z95. Like, you could do the Nash to Pup stuff and dock a ship on there, or deploy a ship after the ship was destroyed, but you had to actually have a Z95 that you got separately. So it was nice to see a release here that combines the two elements there.
And that seems to be a trend going forward with their kind of packaging and design. The Ghost re-release had the Sheathapede class shuttle that came with it that you could actually dock with the model, which was super cool. Saw it with the Scum Falcon with the escape pod that could dock with the Falcon. Just a couple of things like that, which I think is really just kind of a nice touch. It's flavorful for the ships. And it's kind of like a two-for-one package deal, which is good as a purchaser of the game as well.
And then on the small base side, we have three Imperial ships returning, the TIE Defender, the TIE Interceptor, and the TIE Reaper, along with the Rebel RZ-1 A-Wing, so the inferior A-Wing. I guess Jake Farrell's okay, but not a lot of new stuff to expect on the hyperspace front, though, beyond the YV-666. All this stuff, for the most part, is already, I think, fully available in the hyperspace format, right?
Yeah, the only thing from this round, like you said, is the YV-666 and then the TIE Defender are the only things from this list that aren't currently hyperspace legal. So not a lot shaken up that format for this Wave 6 release, except for the new ships.
Just for more opportunity for the Imperials, who are already doing well in Extended, to do even better in hyperspace. And they were not struggling even a little bit in hyperspace.
Right. What's cool about this wave is we do have some new ships coming out for the sequel factions.
Yeah, so we're getting a couple ships from the Star Wars Resistance TV show. We're getting a Resistance ship called the Fireball, and then we're getting Major Von Regg's TIE for the First Order, which has the, I think, most absurd technical name I've seen on any ship in X-Wing so far.
Yeah, it's the TIE BA Barren Space Superiority Interceptor. So, I mean, say that three times fast. It's ridiculous.
That name is so Star Wars. I would believe you if you told me that George Lucas came up with it.
I mean, like, they could have just called it, like, the TIE BA Interceptor. Like, I mean, the TIE FO Fighter isn't, like, super different from just the TIE Fighter. So, I mean, why make this one super long and clumsy?
I'm going to just call it the TIE BA, which feels pretty solid.
Yeah, I like that.
And I'm actually reasonably excited for this now. So since my conversion over to the First Order, just like right prior to Worlds, I'm fully committed to the First Order as a faction now. So I'm glad to see that they're actually getting some love in this wave, which we got shorted out on in the past. And I actually think this ship is going to make quite a splash for them. For a faction that's already pretty limited in the options it has available to it, it's done pretty well with limited options.
Yeah, and I think part of that comes from just kind of the chassis for that faction right now are pretty cheap and affordable. You can get a decent amount of pretty good stuff, you know, maybe barring losing a couple upgrades. But, I mean, Tim, you were flying a First Order list at Worlds. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, and I mean, it didn't. The faction as a whole didn't represent super well. We had no representation when it got down to top 32, which is not a great sign for it. And I think on day 1A, I was one of 9 players actually running the faction. So automatic top 16 right away within faction, just for playing that day. But it's cool to see this ship coming out. And I think one of the biggest reasons this ship is going to be exciting for the faction is that it's basically Soonterfell, like a First Order Soonterfell. Kylo kind of wanted to be Soonterfell, but he was different enough, and when playing against other Soonterfells, he had a lot of weaknesses here. Now we're getting a true I-6 ace pilot for the faction in the form of Major Von Regg, surprisingly. And, you know, just his ship ability, his initiative, and his dial is, I think it's setting up to be a really powerful component that we can add to First Order lists.
Yeah, I like that Von Regg, his ship ability specifically references the Bullseye arc, very similar to Soonterfell. And what's cool is that his ability procs in the systems phase. So his ability reads, in the systems phase, if there is an enemy ship in your Bullseye arc, that ship gains one deplete or strain token of your choice.
And I don't think we've actually gotten confirmation on what deplete is. I think it's in all the points it's been referenced in the preview article, seems to be next to strain. So a lot of people have just been speculating it's going to be like an offensive version of strain where you roll fewer attack die than fewer defense die. Hopefully we'll get confirmation here in the near future of what it does. Either way, though, yeah, new mechanic entering the game here on that level. And it's cool to see that being introduced in his pilot ability, but it's also part of the base chassis used as a cost. So the TIE BA Barren Space Superiority Interceptor is a ship with 3 attack dice, 3 agility dice, 2 hull, and 2 shields. So very comparable to kind of a mix of the classic Imperial Interceptor and the TIE Advanced V1. Kind of the best of both worlds there. And it's got a ship ability, Fine-Tuned Thrusters. After you fully execute a maneuver, if you are not depleted or strained, you may gain 1 deplete or strain token to perform a target lock or barrel roll action. So this is a little bit of a spin-off of Auto Thrusters, which we see on the TIE Interceptor, as well as the TIE Silencer, and fine-tune controls, which we see on the other sprite over in the Republic.
Yeah, and I like this ship ability a lot for a couple reasons. It gives you that option to get the target lock action if you feel like, you know, maybe that's kind of where you want to go. But it also gives you the option to double reposition without gaining stress. And that's something we don't have a lot of in second edition so far. So being able to get that barrel roll kind of preemptively as your first action right away after you maneuver, and then seeing if you, you know, need to boost or get your focus, or, you know, he's got all the core actions. He can focus, evade, lock, barrel roll, and boost. So that gives this ship a lot of versatility, and especially for Von Rigg at Initiative 6 to get that stress-free double reposition.
Well, and I think we've seen the effect of having non-stress-based double repositions over on the other sprite side, where I think that's a huge factor in Jedi's success in the game's competitive scene. You are a little sequence locked here. So whereas with, you know, fine-tuned controls over on the Jedi side, you can do a boost or barrel roll after executing a maneuver and then follow that up with the opposite repositioning action. Here you're going to be limited to just getting the barrel roll in first and following it up with a boost, which in a lot of cases will be fine, but it does limit your options a little bit. But even still, starting with a barrel roll, going into a boost does set you up for some great arc dodges that still line up shots for you.
Yeah, it's also one of the only ways in the game right now, outside of having ships that have the coordinate action or having like a pseudo coordinate like Jake Farrell, to actually set up a double modded munitions attack.
Well, yeah, and even the primary weapon value of the ship is 3, so just, you know, even if you're not loading it out with some munitions, you're still going to be able to get 3 dice with focus and target lock, and that's pretty interesting. So, assuming that depleted does what we think it does, you might reduce the attack value, or you might just take the strain there to reduce your defense and get the fully modded shot, which, if you're already kind of arc dodging, that's not really a problem, right? So if you do the barrel roll to arc dodge or something, then get the focus or a target lock for your normal action, you'll still be able to push out some damage and then not really take the negative effect of it.
Yeah.
You know, because if you're not getting shot at, strained isn't really that negative. You can just clear it with a blue maneuver later, which this ship has a lot of.
Yeah, this ship actually has a pretty incredible dial. It's got 1 hards and 1 banks that are blue, which makes it only the second ship in the game after the TIE Advanced V1 to have a blue 1 hard, which kind of bridges the gap for not having a 2 hard that's blue. So this ship has a dial very similar to kind of a mix between the Interceptor and the TIE Advanced V1, which I think overall for the design of this ship had a lot of influence. So it's got the 1 hard and 1 banks that are blue. It has the 2 hard white, 2 blank, 2 straight that are blue, has a 2 sloop, 3 hard, 3 bank that are white, 3 straight blue, 4 straight blue, 5 straight white, and a 5K. So extremely versatile dial.
Well, and one of the cool things about the costing for fine-tuned thrusters is that even though you're taking on some sort of, you know, red token that you can clear with a blue maneuver, since you're not stressed, you still have the option to just use a white maneuver and then still get actions. Sure, you're going to still have the strain or whatever, but having that open to you is really, really beneficial. Or even just leaving open those sloops or 5Ks for when you need them to, even after you use fine-tuned thrusters, is super good. So I think the real question for me is, where is the ship going to fall points-wise? Because it's not exactly clear, because it does enough that's better than the TIE V1 or the TIE Interceptor that makes me think it'll be at least more expensive than their top pilots.
Right, and it's not the first Initiative 6 pilot for First Order, but it's really their first Initiative 6 ace. So, I mean, I would expect to see Von Rigg, so the Initiative 6 at the highest level, come in probably mid-60s before upgrades. I think overall his chassis is a good contender for Predator as a talent slot upgrade. And then I think it's pretty reasonable to assume, based on what the rest of the First Order faction has to offer, it'll probably have the tech slot, because that's kind of their little unique thing. Maybe a mod slot. And then, just because it comes with some munitions in the pack, probably a missile slot as well.
Oh, I think the missile slot's basically guaranteed, right? Because it's coming with those Magpulse missiles.
Yeah.
Or Magpulse warheads, excuse me. So, yeah, I think the mid-60s estimate for Von Rigg, that seems accurate. I'm a little curious where it's going to fall on the generic side, because I feel like that's going to be a tighter spread than we normally see, you know, high-end initiative pilot to the generic, just by virtue of the ship being able to get both the target lock and a focus
right.
built into it, because having three fully modified dice is really powerful in the game, and there's not a lot of ships that can do that. So, and it's got enough hit points, like, it's on the, you know, not in the most durable end. It could get taken down with a couple shots, especially if you've taken a strain. But at the same time, it's strong enough that it's probably not going to get one-shotted in most cases, even with a strain right. token.
And I think the lowest initiative Von Reg tie is coming in at I3. And I think the closest comparison we have within the faction, just kind of stat line similar-wise, is like the Tyvian silencer with the First Order test pilot, which is like an I4. Comes in at like 58 points. So I don't know, maybe upper 40s for the Initiative 3 Baron Space Superiority Interceptor.
Right. And I think that would be kind of the range you'd see if you like high 50s into mid 60s. You know, comparing that to like Sunfer Fell, who's still at just 53 points, which I think at this point we can say is probably undercosted. And then you look at the Inquisitor, who I think is still currently at 58 points. Which seems okay, but we'll probably get a boost or an increase come the next point changes because it did so well in the World Championships. So there's a chance if they're going to upcost both of those ships that this might get closer to 70 points. Or it might, you know, just make us both look really wrong and be in the low 70s. But I feel like that might be a little too much for what you're getting.
Yeah. I mean, they can afford to make it a little expensive on release just because the rest of the faction is so cheap. And then, you know, retroactively change it later. But, I mean, expect to see me flying First Order when this thing comes out because, man, the model itself is beautiful.
Oh, yeah, like that bright red Interceptor looks awesome. And I'm really excited, too, because the dial options you get there, being able to have access to those, you know, TIE Advance V1 quality maneuvers, the short blue maneuvers, means that you're going to have so much more time on target and still be able to get full action economy from fine-tuned thrusters. So you can get those fully modded shots turn after turn if your opponent's not, you know, actively trying to put pressure on you.
Yeah, really excited for this ship.
Now, the real question, though, John, is are you excited for the Fireball? I'm going to assume that you're probably the only person on this podcast who's actually seen any of the Resistance TV show, so I'm going to trust your judgment here on the lore for this ship.
Sure. I mean, you would be correct. I have watched Resistance. It's fun. I mean, like, it's a good, like, Saturday morning cartoon if you're, you know, 8 years old. I enjoy it just because I enjoy so much of the universe. But, I mean, I'm absolutely not excited for the ship just because, A, I think it looks like garbage and I don't fly Resistance. So that's me. That's my hot take. But let's talk about it anyway.
Yeah, so this one is a ship with 2 attack dice, 2 agility, and 6 hull, kind of. It's got a built-in ability that has the brilliantly named Explosion with Wings. This ship ability says, set up, you are dealt 1 face-down damage guard. So basically it starts with 5 hit points. After you perform a slam action, which it has on its action bar, you may expose 1 damage card to remove 1 disarm token. And the action bar for this guy has Focus, Evade, Barrel Roll, and Slam.
It's just a much worse version of Poe. Like, just fly Poe, or fly 10, or Nian Num. Like, just do that.
Yeah, I think this is a case where I don't really know where this fits in the faction. Like, I can actually see a spot for Von Reg's tie, because the only other I6 we have in the First Order is Quickdraw, who is AC, but he's not a complete ace, just because he doesn't have great repositioning options unless you invest in Afterburners. And even then, his agility is low enough where he's just going to take damage. That's not the way you fly quick draw. But I can see Von Reg's tie really having a place in the First Order. This one, I don't really know what it's going to do for the Resistance because they already have the T-70 X-Wing, which is a really reliable platform. It's got Poe. It's got Nian Num. A lot of reliable pilots. You've got the RZ-2 A-Wing filling in that mid-hit point range. And a lot of those beyond Lulu Lampar are still very affordable. So I'm not sure exactly where this is going to land.
Yeah. And I mean, in the preview article, there's an illicit upgrade card that I think we'll talk about a little bit later. But I mean, it wouldn't be the first ship that has a card in it that the ship can't actually take. But if it does have an illicit slot, then maybe this is like a funny dead man switch carrier. So like you just slam around and do damage to yourself and then try to blow up and do damage to opponent's ships. Like, I don't know. This is maybe like a pseudo swarm counter if you fly it. somewhat right. I don't know. I guess we'll find out.
It has a fairly good dial for having the slam action. You've got a full range of one-speed maneuvers. You got a full range of two-speed maneuvers. You have three straight and three banks that are white with three red hard turns and then three red talon rolls and a four red straight. So you can do some decent slams if you have a full selection of two-speed maneuvers. And doubling up on three banks is also pretty good. But beyond that, I'm not exactly sure what this ship's role is supposed to be. It also comes with those Magpulse warheads, which we'll talk about in a second here. So presumably going to have that missile slot on there. I'm just curious to see where this falls.
Yeah, I'm not sure. And like I said, I don't fly resistance, so I can't really speak to whether or not it fills a specific gap. I think that's more or less kind of Carson's domain between the three of us. I don't think you fly resistance much a lot either, Tim, right?
Not anymore, no. I was digging the triple ace build you could do, Lulo, Nian, and Poe back in the day, but haven't flown them in a while here, so yeah, we'll have to wait till Carson's on again. Hopefully then we'll have some more info on this ship, see what that Fireball ship title actually does. That might change our perspective on it a little bit, but for right now, I'm going to just kind of not get too excited for this ship.
But can we talk about the second most exciting thing to come out in this wave?
Yes, let's talk about it.
So for both ships, we've seen kind of in the card spread a new missile upgrade card release or kind of spoiled. And overall, I think that's kind of a slot right now that suffers in the game for a lack of good options. That's my personal opinion. But we've got the new Magpulse Warheads upgrade card coming out, which has a 3-dice attack. It's range 1-3, so it's the full range, which is not common among the missile upgrades. It has 2 charges and reads attack target lock. Spend 1 charge. If this attack hits, the defender suffers 1 critical damage and gains 1 deplete and 1 jam token. Then cancel all hit and crit results.
This is an interesting ordnance option here. So yeah, like you said, having the full range on a missile seems a little weird. That's kind of nice, though. I'm not sure if you'd necessarily want to run this upgrade on a ship like Von Regstai, which already has a primary weapon value of 3, unless this is really affordable. But it's going to do a lot for ships that have the missile slot and only have 2 primary attack dice, particularly because this isn't faction restricted. So I think this could actually have a pretty substantial effect on the game. And jam tokens are really annoying. I've experienced enough of them now after Worlds to know how troublesome they can be. So having a, you know, slightly higher initiative ship carry one of these, drop that out there, and not only push a crit through if it hits, but also provide that jam token, remove a token from the defender, probably something defensive, and then follow that up with more shots. That's pretty potent.
Yeah, I think it's really cool. I think this would be a really good upgrade for, you know, things like the A-Wing, or even, and I, you know, don't hesitate to say this, but I think the TIE Aggressor would benefit from a card like this too. I have just had a special spot in my heart for the TIE Aggressor since it came out in first edition and would love to see it do well. And I think this card would actually give it some potency.
And John, what is the TIE Aggressor? I'm sorry, I don't remember. Oh, no, I got it. Never mind. I gotcha.
Jeez.
The other card we got spoiled here, too, was Coaxium Hyperfuel. Wait, did this come in? Didn't we already see this one somewhere else? I probably just remember it from the last time I read this article a while ago.
Yeah.
Coaxium Hyperfuel, this is an illicit upgrade card. Presumably, the Fireball will have an illicit slot, I think. It's got a requirement where you must have the slam action, and this card reads, you can perform the slam action even while stressed if you do suffer 1 critical damage unless you expose one of your damage cards. After you partially execute a maneuver, you may expose 1 of your damage cards or suffer 1 critical damage to perform a slam action.
So, interesting card. Pretty limited usability, I think, just because we don't have that many ships that have the slam action that also have the illicit slot.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure this is the only ship that can take this. I'm sure the internet will correct us very quickly if we're wrong about that. But so far, yeah. And this one, again, doubling down on the damage cost to use a ship ability, which seems to be a theme with the Fireball. I'm usually not a huge fan of doing damage to my own ship without a substantial payoff, and I'm not sure if just being able to perform a slam after a partial maneuver is enough.
Yeah. I think I like this card just because it feels super scummy. And like the art on it even has Han Solo from the Solo movie when he's using the coaxium hyperfuel to kind of gamble in his game with Lando. But like, you can't even use this in the scum faction right now, I don't think, which seems like a wasted opportunity.
Maybe they've got something down the coming down the pipeline that will take advantage of this.
Yeah, I'm happy to figure that out as we go. But I guess for now, we'll just have to see how it works on the Fireball.
So yeah, two brand new ships coming with Wave 6 here, which should release probably before the holiday here. So you'll be able to get those just in time for Christmas, I would expect. Not a whole lot of new stuff coming to hyperspace, I guess, other than the TIE Defender and the YV-666. We'll see if those make a big splash. I'm not even sure we're going to have a lot of hyperspace tournaments coming up here on the premier end, so might not even be that important. But yeah, Von Rake's TIE looks okay, and Fireball, who cares? So we're still recovering from Worlds, but I think it's not too early to look at the state of the game and what it's going to be going forward. And there are a couple big questions I think that it's good to ask going into presumably another year leading up to another Worlds. So one of the big questions right now is that it seems like the premier format for X-Wing is the extended format. There was a little bit of a divide there while we had hyperspace events. I'm not currently sure if the upcoming Prime Championships, which will be replacing hyperspace trials, is going to use the hyperspace format. There's probably a good reason they would. But right now, it seems the main focus is going to be on the extended format, which I think raises the question, should hyperspace become the premier format now that we have so many new ships being released, or should it get removed altogether in favor of something else? So what do you think, John, generally about extended versus hyperspace in that debate?
I know we've had this discussion before on the episode about kind of what my initial thoughts on the two formats were, and I think coming out of the Denver System Open, beforehand, I would have picked hyperspace as my preferred format. I'm definitely now in the extended field just because there are so many more options. And I think that overall design for newer stuff has been better, specifically for like the Separatist and Republic factions, that they're not really lagging behind in extended format. You know, we saw both factions do very well at Worlds with the limited number of things that they have available to them. And I think overall, extended is just a better format for, you know, competitive and non-competitive people alike that want to try to get into organized play. You know, for people that convert stuff over or, you know, are just buying into the game, to actually have the opportunity to use all of the content that's available to them in an organized play format, I think just makes the experience more positive and overall kind of better received. I mean, we went to the Denver System Open together, and that was the most fun I have ever had playing X-Wing, and that was an extended format, and so were all of the other System Open series. Gen Con was extended, the Nationals are extended, Worlds is extended, so I mean, I'm not really sure if hyperspace really has a place going forward now that they're going back to a different style of organized play with the announcement of the new Prime Championships or whatever they're calling them now. I think this is an opportunity for them to just kind of cycle out that format like entirely as an option.
Well, it's been an interesting journey too. From the release of second edition, we kind of assumed that there would be, before even hyperspace was announced, that the quote unquote second edition format, which would only include re-released material, would be the main focus of organized play. So it was a little weird when we found out that, you know, the first course on Invitational was going to be extended, and all that, all these other really high level events like System Opens were all going to be extended format as well. It seemed like they were suddenly kind of pushing in the wrong direction. And then when we started to see the mix of hyperspace for all those hyperspace trials versus those upper level premier events running different formats, also a little bit weird to have, you know, hyperspace events lead into Worlds, which would be extended. And then, we had that huge day when they added a bunch of ships to the original Core 3 factions in hyperspace, so it seemed like all the other factions were at a huge disadvantage. But things have really taken a turn. Like you're saying, John, the switch over to extended hasn't been so jarring just because the new stuff coming out has generally been so good. That, you know, like, if you're running Separatists, they did really well at Worlds. We had three lists make top 32, and Paul's made it all the way down to top 8, so that's a really strong turnout. The Jedi were doing strong all the way through the tournament, too. That triple initiative 5 list still terrifies me, and it's what knocked me out of that tournament. So, I'm really in the camp of, it seems like hyperspace is just not even important anymore. Like, we should move beyond that and focus all the secondary play either to new formats like Aces High or something more weird and different, or they should really push the opposite direction and just really move hyperspace down to a tight rotation of ships.
Well, and part of me even wonders if maybe having the hyperspace trials was just kind of a test to see if having two forms of organized play was really a good, you know, way to move forward with the organized play model. And I think overall, you know, hyperspace trials, I mean, we're kind of relatively okay attended. It seemed like, though, I mean, none of them were well as attended as a regional. And I think there were even back in the day of store champs, like some store champs that were bigger than some of the hyperspace trials that went on. I mean, there was one, where was it? Was it the one in Utah or something that was like 18 people? I mean, come on, that's barely even, depending on where you go, like that could be a casual play night depending on the store.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that was the switch over to just having too many hyperspace trials. They needed to find some middle ground between a full-on, you know, one per region event like a regional was, and then just having as many hyperspace trials as we did, which there were tons in the Midwest. So I think part of that was just a tournament structure-wise. Hopefully the Prime Championships will be a nice middle where you have just a few of them per region, but not so many that we get those, you know, 18-person events or less.
I think the only way for hyperspace to, you know, maybe distinguish itself as its own format is if they do a more even rotation of ships. So I've kind of been in the camp of when they add stuff, they should cycle stuff out. So, I mean, I think if they continue to move forward with hyperspace, the addition of the TIE Defender for the Imperials, like, they don't need it. I don't think people necessarily even, you know, want it. But I mean, looking at some of the other faction stuff too, I mean, adding the Star Viper to Scum, they added the A-Wing to Rebels, the TIE Interceptor to Imperials. Like, I think some ships offer good options for the factions. But even now, like, there are still some that I think would make sense in hyperspace, like the Lambda for the Imperials. And they added, you know, like the B-Wing for Rebels. Like, those things make sense. But I think just oversaturating the field with more and more content isn't what's going to distinguish that format from extended.
Well, and I mean, it's gotten to the point now where it really is nothing to distinguish between hyperspace and extended, where most of the stuff that does well in extended is available for use in hyperspace. So you do really need to see a tighter rotation there to get any kind of change at all, because, you know, at this point, we're going to have basically all the good stuff from the Imperial faction available in hyperspace with a few exceptions. So you're going to be able to run some great lists in hyperspace, which raises the question of, well, why am I just not playing extended?
Right.
So hopefully we'll get some, you know, more concrete details here. I either would like to see the format get removed entirely, just because I don't think it's doing anything for the game right now, or see a substantial change to it where, you know, create a different environment, have different point totals for hyperspace so the list building is different, or, like you're saying, John, just really narrow what's available for play, just to make the list building different in some way so it can really distinguish itself from extended.
Yeah. I mean, and I'm at the point now, too, where I'm more or less in the field of just get rid of it. Like, I don't think it really serves a purpose anymore.
I think that's probably the hottest take we've had today. Well, let's move on to some easier questions. John, this one's pretty simple. Is Sunfac bad for the game?
Oh, man. So there's like a couple of different ways to break this question down. Competitively, no, I don't think so. And I think we have some good enough data from Worlds to kind of support that. At the kind of mid-range to casual play level, absolutely. I think he's a negative play experience for the, you know, I mean, less talented players. I mean, I don't want that to have as negative a connotation as it sounds, but, like, you know, I think the really competitive players have the tools and the knowledge to deal with him. And, like, but I wouldn't bring Sunfac to a local game night because it would just feel bad.
Yeah, I agree with you on that front, where I don't think it's such a problem for competitive play, just based on the evidence we have so far. Like, we haven't found the list yet that's really going to be dominating the game. It wasn't the boogeyman that we all expected it to be before Worlds. I do think it is bad for that mid-tier play, though. And I don't mean to say this to diminish X-Wing players, but when you're trying to get people engaged with the game, a lot of that starts on the store level, right? Where you get your casual weekly game nights or even just smaller tournaments going on. You're going to be talking to people who are not as familiar with all the mechanics of the game. And Sunfac, the combination of the passing out tractor tokens and moving other people's ships around, could result in basically, you know, newer players not knowing what's going on, and then suddenly they're not even shooting. And if you're trying to get into the game and you don't even have opportunities to roll dice offensively, you're going to get pretty disinterested in the game pretty quickly.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%.
And I think the Sunfac debate is kind of interesting because there's kind of the opposite going on where, you know, Sunfac is... doesn't seem to be such a problem for the high-tier competitive game, more of a problem for the game store level stuff. I feel like the Quad Star Vipers is almost the opposite of that. It's not a great experience for people who are playing at the store level, but I think it's something that is actively bad for games at the high competitive level because, for people who don't know, the Quad Star Viper list is basically 4 Star Vipers, the Initiative 3 generics on the scum side, with Crackshot. And what this list does is it's an okay middle initiative efficiency list. So you've got decent number of attack dice, decent number of hit points, and decent number of defense dice. So you're reasonably survivable. But it's something that can effectively fortress on the move. So with the curved barrel roll, it can make these tight turns, curve barrel roll back. So you can move around the board, keeping your firing arcs in a threatening position. Hard to really flank these guys effectively. But since they have so many attack dice, it really puts the pressure on your opponent to engage. Where, you know, if they don't take any ships and you end the 75-minute round in a tie, you're going to have 12 final salvo dice, which is going to substantially increase the likelihood of you winning a final salvo in a draw, which has a negative impact on the game, where it's people who, you know, are flying lists that typically don't want to engage right away are suddenly feeling the pressure where, well, if I don't engage right away, even if it's not ideal for me, I'm going to lose out just on the tiebreaker.
Right. And there's a lot of argument to kind of, I mean, the mobile fortress is not something that is new coming out of Worlds. We saw a lot of people complain about it with the Quad Phantoms, you know, just kind of decloaking and doing those small maneuvers like the one banks, one hards, and just kind of staying in a corner or along a board edge. But I think, you know, a lot of people feel that this list is really kind of just exploiting things that, you know, aren't inherently against the rules as they're written in the game. But I mean, there's like a sportsmanship component of it, I think. You know, you're trying to exploit a stalemate. You're stalling for time. You're technically moving, so you're not, you know, you're not fortressing. But it just doesn't it doesn't really feel in the spirit of the game, I think, some of the things that this list does.
Yeah, and the spirit of the game is always a hard thing to analyze because that can mean different things to different people. And sure. I think this kind of just highlights a bigger problem that we see in competitive X-Wing in general is that, yes, you want games to come to a conclusion or approach a, like a full conclusion of ships destroyed. That's generally not the case, I feel, at the competitive level. But at the same time, I want there to be a difference in list types, right? Like, I want there to be lists that don't want to engage right away, want to be more cagey, flank on the outside and then suddenly sweep in, versus I want lists that want to be really aggressive and move in quickly and do a bunch of damage and have, you know, their best time be early parts of the game. I don't like this thing that manipulates when people want to engage. I don't like having Quad Star Vipers there if it means those lists that are supposed to be more cagey can't do what they're intended to do, just because they're afraid of things that actually aren't directly related to list building. They're related to the way a tournament round is structured.
Sure. And I mean, there's definitely a strategy and a science to deciding when and how and where you want to engage. And we've talked about that on the show before, about how that's a big component of, I think in the episode where we talked about how to lose a game, I don't remember the episode number, but we talked about it a little bit then.
Yeah, it was recent. Yeah.
Yep. So I think, yeah, I don't know. I feel like it's really hard, I think, to have, you know, really good, like, factual, non-objective viewpoint of this issue. That's just kind of my opinion, I guess. But I think, you know, when the dust settles and, you know, Quad Star Vipers with Crackshot get costed into oblivion in January, it won't matter.
Well, right, and I'm obviously not trying to list shame anybody for running Quad Star Vipers or running Sunfac. I just want those issues in the game to be addressed generally. I don't think it's something that needs to be addressed necessarily at the player level of, well, don't fly certain lists that are otherwise legal just because you should follow some unwritten rule. I want them to be addressed, and I think in the case of Sunfac, if it does become a problem, it's one that's easily costed to be fixed. I think overcosting Quad Star Vipers fixes that immediate issue, but it doesn't fix the greater issue of how should a tournament round go in X-Wing and what changes need to be made to either the way ships are costed or the way the tournaments are structured to make them, you know, not kind of work on the fringes of the rules.
Right. Now, I think about a week ago now, actually, by the time this episode posts, there was a rules update that talks about the dice limits, basically. We'll talk about them, but I think the attack dice kind of change, might actually be kind of a solution to a list like this with the Quad Star Vipers or, you know, kind of pre-actively, you know, Quad Phantoms, whatever, anything like that. So there's basically been a dice limit to 6 on both attack dice and defense dice, you know, when modifiers are applied and you're rolling dice, whatever. If that dice limit of 6 was also applied to Final Salvo, I think that would actually solve a lot of the issues that we see coming out of the Quad Star Viper list.
And when I was doing the interview with Paul Olson last week, he actually brought this up as well. And I think it would actually be a pretty good solution to one of the big problems here, where if you were just able to, now that we've limited attack dice and defense dice to a cap of 6, just do that to Final Salvo dice too. Because that shakes it up enough where it's going to still encourage people to engage more, because even if you're playing the Final Salvo, you want to get to a point where you have more attack dice on the board than your opponent does. You don't just want to go 0-0 Final Salvo swing. So that would take away one of the huge advantages that the Quad Star Viper list has. So they are more inclined to engage just because they're not necessarily going to have an advantage at Final Salvo. I just think it's kind of interesting, too, that so much of what goes on in a game is, I feel like, not intended, right? Like, when they probably initially came up with the Final Salvo rule, they didn't imagine in their wildest dreams that people would structure lists to have a lot of attack dice and then have a game where no points are scored. Like, that wouldn't even be something I think that would go through people's minds when they were structuring this, right?
Right. And I mean, forgive me for my ignorance here, but I think Final Salvo was actually something that was enacted relatively around the same time I actually started playing X-Wing. And they came up with it to try to get rid of intentional draws, right?
At that point in the game's history, there were different ways to score tournament points. So now it's binary. If you win, you get 1 point. If you lose, you get 0. For a while, there were things called modified wins. So you'd get 0. You'd get 1 if it was a draw. You'd get 3 points if it was a close enough game in terms of MOV. And then you get full 5 points if you won. And then they broke it down to get rid of intentional draws to the point where either a player had to win or lose the game, which necessitated a system like Final Salvo, so that there would be a conclusion to the game where one player was a winner and one player was a loser, regardless of what happened during the game.
And I like the 6 die cap on Final Salvo, too, because it not only addresses the Quad Star Vipers, but also a lot of other things. So, I mean, think about Paul's Separatist Swarm. That list would have 17 dice in a Final Salvo if it came down to
right.
it. Or, I mean, even your list, Tim, that you flew, I think would have, what, around 13?
It's actually 11, yeah.
That's still a lot of dice. I mean, I think the Final Salvo rule in itself is not terrible, but having that dice cap on it, I think, would make it a much more viable solution to kind of solving stalemates in the game.
Well, I even think, you know, like, let's just take it to the next step and just make it a standard amount of dice you roll and have both player roll 4 dice or 6 dice or something to resolve the game and really penalize people for getting to a stalemate position. I think that would do a lot to encourage engagement.
Which, I mean, for me, engagement is kind of what falls within the spirit of the game. Ultimately, X-Wing is a dogfighting, you know, space battle game. Part of that should be engaging in a dogfight and actually having a battle. So I think having more rules that I don't want to say force that on players because that seems a little harsh and maybe unnecessary, but maybe encouraging people to kind of move towards that mindset. And I'm not saying that, like, you know, for some people that's not a legitimate strategy that they like to follow. And I mean, that's fine. I'm not trying to you know, get down on those people about it. But I think this would be an interesting step in that kind of direction.
Yeah, I think broadly speaking, I'd rather see more X-Wing games come to a more complete, you know, closure where ships are dying and that's determining the outcome. Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of Radio TCX. Hopefully Carson will be on next week to tell you why John's and my opinions were all wrong this week. So that should be fun. If you like the show, though, please go on to facebook.com/RadioTCX and like our Facebook page.
You can follow us on Twitter at Radio TCX Podcast. And if you enjoy the show, consider going on iTunes and leaving us a 5-star review, saying what you liked and why you think other people should listen.
And if you're really a big fan of the podcast, please go onto patreon.com/radioTCX and become a direct supporter of the show. It's still going to be some time before we can get tokens out. In the meantime, I'm hoping to push out a lot more exclusive content. Last week's interview with Paul Olson, there's an exclusive Patreon version available on the Patreon page only to people who support the show. I believe it has an extra 7 minutes of content and questions where we talk to Paul about Star Wars in general and some board game recommendations he had. So check that out, and more content coming to the Patreon page in the future. Thank you guys so much for listening, though, to this episode of Radio TCX, and we will talk to you next week. It's a trap.